Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon. We are back. We've actually been on a pretty good streak of not missing our episodes. Like life hasn't gotten in the way since like July. Right? And then let's see. So then it's 15, 29, 12, 26. 26 might be tricky because that's Thanksgiving weekend. I don't know how that plays for you.
Yeah, November's
10,
like the hardest
24.
month for everything.
Yeah, because we get lucky because it doesn't inter it won't interfere with my wife's birthday, and it won't interfere with my birthday because that's my choice to let it not interfere. And then I think Christmas Eve, December 24th is one of our shows, and I don't know how that one would play, but that one probably wouldn't make a difference for me. The 7th, 21st, or yeah, I mean I'm not seeing anything like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, it's Halloween month,
Yeah,
so it's
it is
October
Halloween
1st
month.
today.
It is. I'm very excited for Halloween. Oh, you can see my little bag of candy back there if you're watching live.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I got piles of candy, and then over behind my chair over there I got the Pokemon booster packs, booster packs for
So a
Halloween.
Halloween themed Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
I got them last year. They're like $20, and they for like a big bag of them, and it's like I think there's like 20 packs of cards in there. So I bought like two bags of them, and we're at my mom's house, and my wife is handing the candy and stuff out, or maybe it was my nephew. I think they kind of traded off at one point. So whenever it was, and this little kid comes up, and here's some candy, here's some Pokemon cards, and the kid turns around, and the parents are at the edge of the sidewalk, and he goes, "I got Pokemon cards!" And we're just like, this is so great. So we're absolutely doing it next year too. He was so excited. So that's a new addition, because my mom like makes a big meal for Halloween. It's like one of our like big celebrated holidays, and so she's like, "I'm making the food. You guys just bring the candy." And my sisters bring like awful fucking candy. Like I get that you're
Oh.
not bringing full size. I get not bringing full size. Candy's a little ridiculous for that nowadays. But like, don't get the ones that are like the size of a fucking penny either.
Yeah, or like actual penny candy.
Yeah. That would be even worse,
Dude,
yeah.
that was like the worst, man. When I mean, it's funny because you know all the crappy candies that are always left after you go eat all the good ones, and then you have those stupid little peanut butter ones that come in orange and black wrappers, and then you have the candy corns and what was the other one? There was one that we would get every stinking year. I mean, and then like Tootsie Rolls,
I
nobody
was
eats
just gonna say
those.
Tootsie Rolls. Tootsie Rolls, and
Ugh.
then they have their like fruity flavor Tootsie Rolls, where it's like blues and
Oh,
yellow colored ones, which is like,
they
do
have
they
a
make these
vanilla one, don't they?
exclusively? Yeah, vanilla I think they have, and it's like exclusively for Halloween. Like you don't buy this candy throughout the
No.
year. It's ridiculous.
It feels like it's the same candy coming back every
Yeah. Yeah, they made a surplus of it in 1997, and they're still, working through it.
Yeah, so you when you get it, you just pass it back out the next
Yeah.
year.
Yeah. It's like a fruitcake. It's
Nice.
the Halloween's fruitcake.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Have they announced a date? I don't think they have. Usually they let it run for 3 weeks, and
Yeah.
Halloween is on a Tuesday. So I think
On the
the
Tuesday.
earliest, yeah, I think the earliest they would start it would be in next week on the 10th for Festival of Loss, obviously. I didn't mention that. I don't think I need to mention the candy-centric Destiny holiday event.
It's been going ever since When did it start?
Taken King, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
It was either Taken King or Rise of Iron. It was, and I'm almost positive it was Taken King because they did Crimson Days as well. That was like Festival of the Lost,
Yeah.
Dawning, Crimson Days.
When we got
Oh wait, no, it wasn't even the
Festival
Dawning,
of
it
the
was
Lost,
SRL.
when we got Festival of the Lost the first time, it was a complete surprise. They didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
That was what was cool about Festival of the Lost the first time. Crimson Days, we knew ahead of time because it
I
kind
liked
of
Crimson Days.
teased it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, it was an interesting activity.
Yeah. Sometimes I still use the shaders.
What do you mean?
The Crimson Days shaders from in Destiny 2. Sometimes I still use the shaders from when it was in
Was
D2.
there a Crimson Days in Destiny 2?
Oh yeah. Or maybe they just brought the shaders. I don't know what happened, but I it's been a blur. Didn't
Yeah.
we get Crimson Days the first time Destiny 2 came out? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
'Cause I got
Yeah,
all the
look at
shaders and
that.
everything like within like 3 days. It was funny. My wife and I are pretty good at it.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
love that
it's a
buff
duo
you get.
activity. Yeah. Huh. Look at that. Yeah. The Diesel Punk ornament.
Yeah,
The Vow.
that's right. 'Cause at first the Diesel Punk was only in the raid, I think, and then
Oh no, it's a Wardcliff Coil.
yeah, but like you couldn't get the ornament to drop from you had to do the raid to get the ornament to drop the first time, and then later they brought it with Crimson Days.
Interesting.
It was
Yeah,
either a raid or
Reunited,
like a
Falling Apart, and
Grandmaster in
Vengeance.
Nightfall or something. Yeah.
Yeah, those are the buffs. I mean, I understand why they wouldn't do like PvP events because it is like very it's a big
Yeah.
part of the game, but it's also niche. So I get it.
Yeah. I had a little bit of fun in PvP this week. It wasn't
Oh
too
yeah.
bad. I will say like as it needs a lot of help, duh, but it has I would say it's been in a better position than last year for definitely, definitely for sure. It's way better than last year. So like even though it's stale. The new map is kind of cool, but I rarely get it.
Yeah. Well,
Anyway.
I was just going to say, well, last week we tried to talk about what we're talking about this week because last week we failed to talk about the lore book Last Days. So I think we should try to get right into it. You want to start with the lore card?
Yeah.
So, brought to you from Destiny Armory Defined, we have our weekly lore card.
I'll never get old.
I remember this time.
You did. Okay, this one is a ghost shell. It came out with this season and it has a pretty cool, appearance. It matches the armor set you get, which looks like all the Witch Queen's aesthetic
Architecture.
with yeah, and then the light the hive with light
Lucent
towers.
Hive.
What are they? Lucent Hive. Jesus, man, I'm so bad with names. The Lucent Hive. It looks like a Lucent Hive in the shape of a ghost.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Okay, and so the neat thing is on the face of it, you look at this word and if you don't know what pharmakos is, you just kind of like immediately assume, oh, well, it's like pharmacy, right? Because you
Yeah.
think of like, what is that word similar to pharmacy or pharmaceutical or whatever? And then at the bottom, it says for sacrificial ghosts. And so that one's kind of interesting because the lore card, I'm sorry, the lore entry for this one is neat because it's basically Savathun holding a bunch of caged ghosts, and she's enticing them to step forward and basically join her army of Lucents or whatever. And they're all cowering together. But the weird thing is they already have the chitin armor, or they're already clad in chitin. It mentions that in the lore. So it's kind of strange to me that she's trying to get them to come forward out of their cage, but they've already been hivified, if that's even, you know what I mean? Like, they've already got the hivey hiveness adornments on them. So, like, she's already kind of done something to these ghosts that are in a cage that she's got trapped. And then she's like, using, you know, they say her needle point fingers, whatever, to come out. Come here, you know, come here, baby, you know. And so they're all cowering together, but she uses manipulative verbiage to get them to come out. One particular line doesn't work, and so she switches tactics and she says, look, at the end of the day, we all want the traveler to survive, don't you? You know, and so like we love the traveler, so we just want. And so then the ghosts start to listen, and one of them emerges from the back of the crowd of ghosts and steps forward as the other ghosts are kind of like trying not to let it go. But that was interesting. So that kind of alludes to this flavor text, which says for sacrificial ghosts, right? So the interesting thing about that is that ghost could be seen as, you know, sacrificing itself for the betterment of the traveler, whatever. And went forward to Savathun. But what's interesting about the word pharmakos is well, we'll just get right into it. So pharmakos is an ancient Greek ritualistic practice involving the selection and expulsion of a scapegoat to cleanse a community of its troubles. The chosen individual was often an outsider or someone perceived to have brought misfortune and is subjected to humiliation, abuse, or physical harm. So they're kind of like a person that's used as a proxy to, you know, purge all of the community's, you know, just like troubles onto, which is really like obscene when you think about it. It sounds horrible, right? Like this entire community of people picking one individual to just kind of beat up and then tell them, you know, you suck, you know, all these horrible things, and then use that person as their way to like vent and purge whatever's going on in their societies. So getting into it, the ancient societies originally were fascinated by their ability to explain and eradicate misfortunes. One intriguing ritual that emerged from the desire of purification was this ancient Greek practice of pharmakos. The purpose of pharmakos is to restore harmony and purification within the collective consciousness and the community by protecting their negative energies, or I'm sorry, projecting their negative energies or impurities onto a single person. So this ritual helped to alleviate societal anxieties and challenges existing cultural norms and boundaries. This ritualistic sacrifice, often involving the selection of subsequent expulsion of a scapegoat, held a great significance in the ancient Greek belief system. So this concept of pharmakos can be traced back to ancient Greece, primarily during the archaic and classical periods, but its origins are shrouded in mystery, and this ancient practice even predates historical records. So this is believed to have originated from other older rituals observed in Mesopotamian or in, you know, Near Eastern cultures. But pharmakos carried deep cultural significance within the ancient Greek society. So it served as a means to restore order and harmony during times of crisis or upheaval. The ritual allowed communities to project their fears, anxieties, and frustrations onto a single individual. This ritual unearthed society's collective anxieties and exposed the societal boundaries and prejudices, but it also allowed the community to redefine cultural norms and expectations, as the scapegoat, keyword, was often an outsider or a marginalized individual or somebody perceived as a threat. What's interesting is, like, the ritual of pharmakos no longer exists in its ancient forms, but we know this term scapegoat to this day still. And it's still, like, it's a coined term that's been used to describe a person or a group that's unjustly blamed or persecuted for the ills of society, right? So that's a neat one to unpack. This whole definition is a neat one to unpack. And I don't really know, like, 100% what they're getting at with that, but maybe they're using an archaic word in a more, like, current type of environment, you know, which would be this far future fantasy world that Destiny lives in. And so for me, thinking about the ghost that steps forward and sacrifices itself for the betterment of the traveler is kind of like a reverse of this idea of pharmakos, where, you know, the society picks an individual that was a pariah of sorts, or somebody that was an outcast, or just somebody that they straight up had bigotry towards, and put all of their, you know, troubles onto that person by abusing them and purging themselves of this, like, feeling that they're, you know, they're doomed. So it's weird because it's kind of like this reversal. And what I was thinking about is, how do we treat Savathun? And she's kind of like the pariah for us. And she's kind of like the scapegoat, you know, for the hive, in a way. And so it kind of makes me wonder, like, how we treat Savathun and what we think of her. You know, it could be a trickery, right? But, like, it makes you question, what, you know, is she really bad, or is she really good, or is she really, you know, necessary towards our, you know, ultimate goal, which is to, you know, fight the witness or whatever. And so she's kind of like this, you know, she's got the blessing of the traveler. She's gained the light. She has a whole entire Lucent brood, but we still demonize her, and we put all of our crap on her as if she's the herald of the entire hive collective. But what she's shown in the lore is that she's kind of separate, and even her sister has so much disdain for her. Yeah. So anyway, that was what was kind of neat about that. And that was a lot for me to unpack off of a simple definition, but this definition can kind of get you in the core, because you start to think about, like, how society is, how people are, why we have this need to just, you know, be bullies to certain individuals sometimes. And, you know, even on social media, it happens, you know, when people get unjustly crucified for things that we got wrong, or people got wrong, or whatever. So anyway, it's neat.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm repeating some, or if I'm asking something that you already said. Something was printing on the printer behind me while you were talking, and so I got distracted as my wife was asking if she could come and stop it, because she didn't realize we were recording until until it was already going, and so I was like trying to gesture, like, go, the camera's not even on, like, you're free, like, please. I saw it picking up on my OBS, so if it did come through, I just wanted to apologize. and also in that moment, if I'm saying something that you'd actually said, I'm also sorry, because reading the lore entry is interesting, because it says how, like, as you said, these are already hive ghosts. And they seem to be hive ghosts that could not find a hive guardian, a hive risen, or hive to be risen. And so, or maybe they could have, but Savathun didn't want them to, and, like, plucked them away, because they're kept in a cage They're locked up, and Savathun's like trying to get them to come out, and they have to come out of their own free will, which is interesting. She's able to lock them up, and but they need to sacrifice themselves for sacrificial ghosts for whatever the purpose is. And she says, "Come now, the light belongs to all of us. Aren't you curious?" Like, curious of what? Because then it's like they don't move, and all they did was stare at the litter of ghost shells behind her. And so it's like, she's killing them for something. They're literally sacrificing themselves for something. And it makes me wonder, could this have been the method that she needed to like figure out to take the traveler from our sky and bring it into her throne world, which was her.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. You really don't know when this happened or the like timeline or what's going on. And it would make sense to find and discover something like this now, because we're inside of her throne world, you know, finding trying to use.
We got our fingers in her secrets now.
Yeah. There you go.
So it makes me wonder if so this practice, so like in The Witch Queen, she was successful in like taking the traveler from us and bringing it into her throne world. And we were able to like reverse it as it was happening, or reverse it after it was already there. In any case though, it makes me wonder, what else could she have figured out? Is this the reason why she is the one that we need to speak to get inside the traveler? Like, did she figure out how to get inside the traveler, like without the witness, without the veil?
That's interesting.
Another,
no, man, that's a crazy thought.
Yeah. And another thing that I wanted to talk about, as you were saying, you question, is Savathun actually evil? Is she necessary, and things like that? And it makes me consider how Savathun was granted the light. She didn't steal it. She was granted the light by the traveler, which means the traveler felt that she deserved it. But we now also know that the traveler isn't exactly picky on who gets the light. You can be a bad person and still get the light. We've known that for a while.
Right.
But we do have an instance where Rolk, a very devout disciple of the witness, was able to obtain a ghost, and the traveler, like not like a ghost to resurrect him, but physically capture a ghost. And the traveler knew this through Savathun's throne world, through the pyramid that Rolk was imprisoned in, and was able to remote detonate the ghost, and then speak through it and say, or reverse that, speak through it and then reverse detonate the ghost, saying that the light was not for Rolk. And it's like, well, Savathun was also a disciple of the witness. Is there a word for like past repenting?
For like having washed yourself of your previous sins,
like repentation, repentation,
repentance,
I guess. Was it because of Savathun's repentance that it was like, all right, you're saying fuck you to the witness, that means you're cool with me? Because like in Final Shape, we're getting new light powers, and it's because this is the last thing. And it's like, so does the traveler not mind that we wield the dark? And it's that you're wielding the dark, but you're wielding it against the witness, so you're kind of cool with me.
Yeah, you
know, there's all these like layers of nuance.
Yeah, I always go back to it, it's something I said originally back in D1, and you know, Destiny and Bungie has like nailed this head all you know, they just keep beating the horse, right? It's a game of sacrifice, and so like it's all about sacrifice. Our ghost finds, you know, it's not necessarily like the traveler can be the one, but the ghosts are out looking for somebody worthy of the light. You know, they're like looking for somebody that they have that spark or bond with. And I would try to argue, like, so the way I reconcile this with light versus dark and how they've explained they're, you know, synonymous with one another now, and they're not really necessarily inherently good or bad. So that being said, the way I look at it is, it can happen on both sides of the coin. And sacrifice is like at the pinnacle of, you know, like what's morally right. It's always the most morally right thing to do is to sacrifice oneself towards, you know, the betterment of whatever, right? Or to, you
Martyrdom.
know, to, yeah, well, you know, martyrdom is something that happens after the sacrifice. Like I would do. Like I would suspect that if Savathun remained dead, all of the hive would collectively consider her the martyr of the Lucent Brood, and you know, try to keep that going. But like, or like when the speaker died, you know, he very much says that line, and so he's kind of the martyrdom for the light side. But what I was thinking is, it's all about survival and sacrifice. And so you can't really say, well, it's like that trolley problem. You can't really say that one decision is necessarily good versus the other decision. It's all about just surviving and remaining alive and sacrifice when necessary, right? So like the ultimate play is to be able to sacrifice yourself in, and I don't mean like kill yourself or die, right? What I mean is like be able to, you know, put yourself in harm's way so that you can survive, or so that others can survive, right? And so that's part of being a hero, that's part of being a champion of the light, all of these things. And I have a strong feeling that that's how the light is found in us. And that's how the guardian, or that's how the ghost knows, you know what I mean? Like knows the collection. And so Savathun, as evil as she is to us, is a survivor, and she wants to, you know, she sacrificed herself many times. And so maybe that was the key,
So
is
maybe
this
it's not
sense of sacrifice.
sacrifice, it's the willingness to sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's just enough, you know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Well, do you have anything more that you want to say about Pharmakos?
No.
All right. So we have another 2 weeks of story content. So we have another 2 weeks of my notes on these weeks. And so we're just gonna burn through these really quick and
Go ahead.
hopefully not get too sidetracked, and then we'll get into the lore book, Last Days from the Lightfall expansion. So week five starts out as it always does with the holo projector, and we are speaking with Ikora. She informs us that she briefed her hidden about Eris's connection with the proto worm Asa. And I don't know if we've said proto worm on the show before. I know there's been like some, like, what do we call Asa? And then she's a proto worm because she's the exact same species that the worm gods were before they took the bargain with, I guess more specifically with Rolk than the Witness, if I remember correctly. But
I guess, yeah. That's kind of a muddy one, isn't it?
I mean, with the Witness, maybe with Rolk being the like intermediary, but still with the Witness. So yeah, there are a bunch of worms, a bunch of proto worms, which it's weird to call them proto worms in my opinion, because it's like they are still worms. It's like they're just non-hive worms. But
And then we have Proto Hive, you know, with the that was mentioned.
And I think that's why it's like there's hive and worm gods, and there's proto worms and proto hive. So it's like before the darkness, I guess.
Makes you wonder who's writing all this.
Was a good one. That is a reference that I don't think many people are gonna get. And that was a Destiny reference too. We were actually on topic.
Hey.
God, what was that?
Sorry.
Was that from Taken King?
I think so.
I think it was. Oh my God, that is fucking old, man. Holy
Deep cut.
shit. God damn. In any case, the Hidden weren't very happy about what Eris is up to, but Eris is learning the secret of the Hive from inside, and so maybe she'll be the key to defeating the Witness. And Ikora says the actions of the Witness will have far-reaching and dire consequences, but so would allowing Eris to be consumed by the Hive. Eris is determined and now has the power to match. The only thing she needs is our support. So they're reinforcing this idea of Eris not. I accidentally ripped out one of my pages. Eris not being able to control, and they keep hammering that, you know, and that's there. It feels like a lot because we're playing it week, 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 week. Like we play it all in like a sitting, but this is supposed to like span over a week, you know. But that much drip feed, it's like, oh, log on Thursday so you can go get your holo projector, where Ikora tells you, I was like, no, that's not happening. There's not enough to come back for. So then after that, we have we alters the summoning, and then we have another holo projector. Mine was bugged, so all I got was the text for it. I didn't actually see what was all the details that were said. But Amaru plays another recording for us with jealousy because it almost sounds like Savathun is rooting for us. And so in this recording, Savathun says, "I can't wait to see what they're capable of." And Amaru claims again that Eris will fail. After that, we witness a conversation between Eris and Ikora. And Ikora and Eris praise us for our successes in using hive magic and the light. Eris explains the meaning of Ayat, and Ikora tells us this can't go on for much longer, and that we are in control. And so in week five, we finally got to go visit the Mbaru engine, which is Savathun's like battery of trickery. Type of thing where it's like it's complexity for complexity's sake. So it's like a way to f it was a way to feed her worm. It's interesting now that we're going to it with her worm out of the equation. And in our gun, right?
I
Parasite?
guess, and our grenade launcher has
That
got
was
her worm.
that was her worm.
That's weird.
I was gonna say doing Mbaru should give us a parasite catalyst.
Ooh,
Right? How cool would that
that would be
be?
cool. Yeah, that would be cool.
So the
That's
Mbaru
funny.
engine is a room where its walls and ceilings are also like one room. So you can like kind of they it's six. Yeah, it's six sides. It's six
The
sides of
gravity
one
is the
room.
same, but like, yeah, the gravity is the same, but the walls and the ceiling are the floor. And so, like, when you look up and down and to the side, it still looks like you're. Like, yeah, you could walk up there and whatnot. It's pretty cool looking. It's very like an Escher drawing.
And so you do it, and this is another thing that I'm mentioning this now because of what ends up happening this week. So you perform a test of cunning, and so in the test of cunning, you have to find a series of chests. First, it's just like one chest, and then it's two chests, and then I think it's three chests, or maybe it's two chests, and then it's one chest, or three chests, whatever, however many
I think
chests it
yeah, it was
is. And so
It's
you do
two
that.
chests, but you have to pick the right one first.
And so you have to pick the right chest because there's a number of false chests, and you do that by looking at the hive runes that are near and pointing to the chests. And so it's Bungie thought they were funny because they basically made it X marks the spot. And so you bounce around looking for them. I spent like 30 minutes. I couldn't find the last fucking chest, and it was like right in front of me the entire time. I'm up on like the ceiling looking for
Yeah,
shit,
that
and
was
it
me too.
yeah.
My wife and I were in there, but she got it. Like, we didn't make one mistake. She was like, no, I know it's chess. And so she went and picked the right one first. And so we didn't hear any of the laughter. I only knew that there was laughter about it when I went back and watched someone's video.
If you fail, I forget what the text it says, but Savathun laughs, you die, and there's no real consequence. And you can do it again this week if you want to hear the laughter. I forget if I got anything doing it again this week, but I did it again this week before realizing that you had to first get a new card. But so before the end of the week, we had one more radio message with Amaru. The Exo Stranger warned us that of the Darkest Timeline eras, or not the Darkest Timeline. Oh man, that's Community. The Dark Future, the Dark Future eras, where Ikora retorts that stasis is what corrupted her, not hive magic, so that she'll be fine. Amaru claims that we have hubris to ignore the hive magic's power, and Ikora replies that Dark Future Eris despaired after suffering her nightmares. So throwback to Shadowkeep, but we helped her throughout, and she's on a different path now. So it's funny that Ikora is like, well, it was stasis that corrupted Eris, and this time she's using hive magic. And it's like, but she has stasis as well. She got stasis in Shadowkeep. And so she's saying the real difference is that in Shadowkeep, Eris's nightmares kind of just won out.
Yeah. And I mentioned it right when it started, you know, the first episode, the biggest difference now, which they just said, which was funny for me. It was kind of like a ha moment, but they said the difference between Eris now versus that dark timeline is that she has us, our support. Mm-hmm. And I pointed that out when we first had our first episode on this season. And I just thought it was funny because there was that one little dialogue line that said, basically she has the support and help. And it really was the friends we made along the way.
it's a big difference. She's in a much healthier state, and it's good to see her like this, because her introduction was with the Dark Below, where she's saying how like all my friends are dead and there's nothing I can do about it, and she kind of helps us go on the path for Crota. And then it's just like, well, okay, well, we killed Crota, and she's like, yeah, I'm so deep in this now, I also know about Oryx, and I will also help you take out Oryx so Oryx doesn't kill anyone. And it's like throughout these trials, like, we become closer with her. And it was like, then Wrath of the Machine, she's just kind of taking a back seat. But before the Red War, which like canonically would be like within a year, 2 years after the Taken King, she goes off to search for Savathun. And because she knows that Savathun is planning something, and she wants to be ready for it. And in that search, she partners with Marasov, and she's always been partnered with Marasov.
Yeah.
And so then she comes back in Shadowkeep. And so it's like all of this theoretically happened in the dark future. Up to Shadowkeep happened in the dark future. You know, like, Oryx was taken care of, Crota was taken care of, because they're not a thing. The only hive entity that is mentioned in the dark future is Savathun, who is actually under Eris's control/leadership.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so it was us in Shadowkeep that changed the events for her, because instead of being tormented by her nightmares and then finding stasis, she resolved her nightmares and then found stasis. And that theme kind of carries throughout for her for a while. Like in Season of the Haunted, she helps others resolve their nightmares. And now she's in a really good place.
Yeah, because, you know, like the dark timeline didn't happen for Zavala or for Ikora, because they got to wrestle with their nightmares and overcome them.
Yeah, and Drifter, for an example of the dark future, like, Drifter is now, like, he seems kind of, like, hopeful that, like, we're gonna actually, maybe not hopeful, but, like, he's invested in us, you know? He's not in the dark future, which should be happening right about now, I think, if the dark future were allowed to continue. This is where that point in time is. I think Elsie had a line about that. Drifter was supposed to go to the Deep Zone Crypt and fail in putting himself into an exo as his like last gambit to survive. So like that hasn't happened whatsoever. Like he's just like, yeah, you know, I'm working with you. He was not working with us this season, but he has been working with us like last season and stuff. Like he's invested in what we're doing.
It's interesting.
And so then we have week 6 and we finally have our third elemental attunement. I picked Arc. We have another Oh nice. Yeah, so I did Solar Void, you did Void Solar.
Yeah.
And so then we have a holo projector with Eris, and Eris is preparing for the next ritual. She calls it the next ritual, which I think is interesting because it's like obviously this is a game, so it needs to be ready for us to do it whatever the hell we want. But like canonically it seems like she's doing one ritual at a time per week, which is the only real requirement for most of these story content.
Yeah.
And she talks about the feeling of justice she gets from these rituals. She's being compelled more by the Hive. And so, she was vengeance. She's the Hive God of Vengeance. And she's excited to enact vengeance / justice on Zivu and the Hive. And she says, it is then I find that sweet moment, and deep beneath my hideous mask, I smile. So, I think there's either one or two more weeks. Usually I think a season is 8 weeks long of story content, but per the Triumph, I'm pretty sure next week is the last one. I might be wrong about that, but so they're really hammering in this, like it's getting like so close for Eris to be like too late. So expect within the next couple weeks that like we're going to have this big mission of like stopping Eris from doing that. And so we actually witness a conversation with Eris and Amaru, where Amaru praises Eris on her tithes for the first time. And she says how sword logic is just a blunt tool and any idiot could wield it, basically throwing shade at Zivu. Amaru mentions how he's not even excited to bring Savathun back. Like he's kind of like, yeah, fuck her. She sucks.
Yeah.
Which maybe it's because he's like being like, what? You tricked us into being your Hive ghost, and now you're just relying on the Guardians anyway. Like, what was the point of us? You know, he's feeling kind of used, or maybe he's lying. And he says, even with the Guardians' help, you're still coming up short. And the path to victory is close at hand, even if you lack the eyes to see it. Which I thought was funny, because that sounds like a joke of her saying, I have three eyes and you have one. Even if you lack the eyes to see it. And so then we have a radio message with Ikora and Eris, and Ikora urges Eris to stop because it's too dangerous, and Eris wants to stop. She doesn't want to keep doing this, but she's the only chance to survive Zivu, for humanity to survive Zivu. And Ikora says, do you know what I see? A friend who takes risks because she doesn't want anyone else to. And Ikora says, I don't want you lost to this. And then Eris says, then help me finish it. Eris also says, like, lists off the many times that she's relied on our help to do the things that she could not do herself. But now she can do things herself. So she's, like, finally stepping up to the plate. And then we have an Amaru holo projector to finish off the story content for this season, for the week. Amaru has run the numbers, and Eris doesn't have what it takes. We're going to lose, so Amaru is preparing to leave. Fuck raising Savathun, and then he calls our ghosts an idiot.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's telling the truth about Savathun or not, about not wanting to raise her from the dead.
Yeah, you know, it could be that he's just, his sole purpose is to sow doubt and make us feel unworthy.
Yeah. Or maybe he's like really like pissed off at her because of how
Yeah, or it could
reliant
be,
she
yeah.
is of guardians.
Yeah.
And so, unrelated to the story, in Sabathun Spire, there is a new opaque card that can be obtained, and when you do, it lets you access a second area and apparently also the final area, but I think that's a lie. Based on the triumph, the final area in the Inbaru engine, and in this area, it's a little bigger, and it's filled with they have a special name, but it's like Knights in Thrall, and all the Knights in Thrall are standing on the plates that kind of point like they did to the chest, except there's no glyphs, hive runes, or anything to like help you identify what you're supposed to do. But you're supposed to make a march of war. This is a tenth of a test of strength. And so, spoilers, skip ahead for a minute because we're just going to talk about it. What happens if you wanted to figure out this puzzle on your own? Have you done it right now?
No, but I know about it.
Oh, okay. So you don't care if I explain it?
No, I don't care.
Okay. So basically, up on a cliff, there's an insight, deep sight. You activate the deep sight. It gives you a path to where you start. So you kill a knight, and then you kill who the knight points to, and then you kill who the next one, and so on and so on and so on. You just keep killing in the order that they're pointed to. Very simple. After that, you go into a new room where you start leapfrogging who you kill, and I don't know what the logic behind that was. Like, it feels it's kind of like a brute force thing where it's just like, oh, okay, I leapfrogged this one, so let's continue this method. And that's all it is. It's not a very hard puzzle. So once the puzzle is completed, though, like you're it's not, they call it a test of strength, but then they're like, and you've now invoked war or something along those lines. And it's like, wait a second. If the first one was a test of cunning, so like trickery, cunning, Savathun, and the second one is of war, like, is there gonna be a third one for Oryx? And it's like these are like the staples of the Hive Gods, or are there only two because there's Xivu and Savathun left? And it's like, did we just empower Xivu? Did we actually just like call her to us? Did we do what Amun Arath did on Tora Bottle? Like,
Oh shit.
I have so many
Yeah.
questions as to like what the fuck we just did in the
Conjured with
Inbaru
war.
engine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
conjured we conjured war. That's what it was. We conjured war. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like how that was the last thing I just did this week. We conjured fucking war. Like, oh, that's not good.
Right.
This is a really
Yeah,
good example.
which was also the thing that people were asking last week is, did we conjure Savathun back with trickery by going into her Embarrowed engine and all that crap? You know, it's scary to think because it's kind of like it's a catch 22 when you're dealing with the hive in so many ways.
And so conjuring war, conjuring trickery doesn't really cause anything necessarily. It would bring Xivu out of her throne world and potentially even bring Xivu direct. Excuse me, bring Xivu directly to us. If we were to conjure, what was it? He was the navigator. What was his thing?
Yeah.
Oryx's.
You mean the Taken King, just like being a nav the first navigator? He was conjured with knowledge.
Knowledge.
See,
Knowledge?
yeah, seeking. It was something
The
along that line.
seeking of knowledge or something like that?
Yeah, he was like because he was. God dang it! It was.
Well,
Because
either
he,
way.
because when he fights the worm or when he takes from the worm, he's like, you wouldn't give me the answer that I seek because he's
Yeah.
seeking knowledge. He's seeking the answer. And so he takes it.
Oh.
by taking the knowledge from the universe.
My whole point was whatever we would conjure for Oryx in the name of Oryx, assuming there is that the triumph did lie and there is a third test to be performed in the Imbaru engine, because there is a third card after the, it's the Imbaru engine card, the strength card, and then there's a third card in the table, and it's like they group all the cards together, you know, went solar arc void for those, you know, so like obviously the last three have to do with the Imbaru engine. What's that last card if not a card for Oryx? Conjuring Oryx's identity wouldn't bring him back from the dead. He's dead. He's not in his throne world. He's dead. So
yeah, just,
I cannot say that enough. I cannot repeat that enough.
I guess the only, that's weird. I guess the only way that, I don't even know if that would work, because you'd have to take something from him.
He's already taken.
Because he's the Taken King.
Yeah, he took himself in the campaign, in the Taken King campaign.
Yeah, that's funny. So somebody would have to take themselves. I don't know. That would be crazy.
So, do you have any more thoughts on this week?
No, I'm liking it so far. It's cool.
Yeah, this season's been really good. The only thing that I feel like would make me like this season more is if it was just like less of, here's your weekly drip of like, oh, something's happening with Eris. Oh, something's happening with Eris. We got to be careful. And it's just like, if it was just like, that's my big hope for episodes in the future. If it's just like, here's Eris learning to control hive magic, episode part one. And then episode part two, it's like, here's Eris. Is this safe? Is this okay? Like, are we making a mistake doing this? Episode part two.
Yeah.
And then episode part three is, oh shit. Fix it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Instead of just like bite, you know?
And I get it. You know, there are people that are not really invested in the lore, but they want to know, like, what are they doing? And so they keep, you know, they keep repeating themselves or making it plain text that, you know, they want you to feel the feelings without it. For the people that aren't invested deeply within the lore, they still want them to have the emotion and feelings tied to the season. So they have to, you know, they have to... Is Eris going to be okay? You know, say that over and over again. Or is she going to succumb to the hivey hiveness? Or, you know, just like these things. Or like, is what she's doing bad? You know, it's like, make you question, make you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you want to get into the last days, Lord?
Yeah, let's do it, finally.
Yeah, you know.
The last attempt to do the last days.
And I'm realizing, like, where we are with time. It's just going through 2 weeks of, like, because there's actually quite a bit happening, even if I'm kind of, like, saying I'm hopeful for the future. There is quite a bit happening. Like, every week we do get a little more information, a new perspective, a new line. You know, we do get new things every week. And that's what makes this so hard to talk about lore books. We would used to, where we could just like, okay, here's the episode, we're talking about a lore book, now we're talking about the season, but when the seasonal story is over, then it's like lore book time, where it's like, all right, let's go deep into these lore books. We've got nothing but
Then the episodes will probably be easier for us to cover, because it won't be like that, I guess.
The future, maybe we'll have to revise what we do. we'll come to that after the final shape in episode one, we don't need to get into that. So the last days the last days lore book is little bits of story, and they're very nice. I suggest fully reading this book. We're just going to summarize it, because we're hoping that on our next episodes we can talk about this season's lore books, that they'll be fully fleshed out and ready to read. So this is from Lightfall, and they're little stories about the last days of the Neo-Muni people before they all got uploaded into the Cloud Arc, which happened before the Red War.
No, it happened. Didn't it happen with the Arrival?
Oh yeah, Season of the Arrivals, like yeah. Before Beyond yeah. Light.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, this happened like in Season of the Arrivals time.
That's
so,
correct. Yeah.
So what is that? Like 3-4ish years ago, they had yeah. this whole thing about coming in. So each one takes a look at a different person and their anxieties and fears and like hopes going into the Cloud Arc.
Matrix.
Yeah, into the Matrix.
Being uploaded into the Matrix.
Yeah.
Which via the veil, which that's even crazier
yeah,
to think.
Yeah, they used the veil to do all this. And I don't even know. You know, we should... That'd be a good one to do. The veil containment logs.
Yeah.
I kind of just like want to upload those because I recorded them all. Question mark. At the very least, I recorded them all from like the second or third one. I recorded them all just because I let them pile up, and we can just get them out. Like we can literally play them on the show ourselves. Mm. Probably not get in trouble for it, and then give our commentary. on it because yeah. they do offer some more insight into like what was really happening with Lightfall, and I mean as the seasons go on we learn more and more, so
yeah,
it makes the Lightfall story better.
Yeah, it does.
But so the first entry is do you think it'd be Mr. Che?
Yeah, that's how I was saying it. Yeah
so Mr. Che is a teacher of Neo-Muni children. And my summary is, at the most, the end of the Red War campaign, so roughly 8 years ago, but we think it's actually roughly 4 years ago, Neo-Muna discovered the return of the Pyramid Fleet. And, oh, that's why I said at the end of the Red War. They discovered the return of the Pyramid Fleet. So it's at the end of the Red War campaign, the Pyramid Fleet woke up. And before yes. Arrivals... we knew they were coming back in Season of the War Mind, which was, I yep. think, the season before Arrivals. So
because yeah. we saw the little map on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, actually, I do agree with what you said. It's probably more like they went in like 5 years ago, which is another thing that I'll say after I get through the summary of this first entry. This was when the decision was made for them to all go hide deep underground and upload their consciousnesses into the Cloud Arc so that they could still continue as a society while in a hibernating sleep. So their right. bodies go into cryo, as it gets called later on, despite not actually having anything to do with cryo, cryogenics.
It's a very Halo thing. Yeah.
It's just like, we're not freezing you. And it's like, it's cryo. It's like a man ray. That's not my wallet. Like, we're not freezing you. It's yeah. not cryo. And it's like, it's cryo. Like, yeah, no, we know. But so the voice actor for Nimbus, in an interview, they'd spoken about how they wanted Nimbus to come off as this like young, I don't know if they said kid, but this young person who had lived their life in the Cloud Arc, and this was like their first time existing in the physical world, and they wanted that like emotion to come off in Nimbus's voice acting and like how their excitement to things and stuff like that. And so now we're learning, well, how old do you think Nimbus is? And it's like, right. So maybe the VA didn't have all the info, because I mean, you know, I'm sure this wasn't fully conveyed. Maybe something was said a little weird, but it also going into the Cloud Arc and then finally coming out even 5 years later, like you're a different person. from when you came out. So
that's true.
Just a little fun fact about Nimbus's VA, whose name I don't remember.
Oh, I had it in front of me.
Gotta love that.
Gotta
silence.
Do it properly. Yeah, we gotta do it properly.
Marin M. Miller.
There you go.
It is my honor to announce that I voice Nimbus in Destiny 2 Lightfall. I know the team pushed for a non-binary answer. Thank you. Yep. Okay. Definitely them. I wasn't accidentally reading someone just talking about them.
Yeah.
And so basically, Mr. Shea is just, you know, trying to reassure the kids, like, yeah, we're just going into a hibernating sleep. It'll be fine. And you'll,
which is a reoccurring theme for all of these, which is like this reassurance. You'll be okay. It's going to be all right. This is,
And later on, it gets kind of like, holy shit, wait, what? Because I know when I'd heard about how they're like in the Cloud Arc and stuff, my brain did not think this is what it was. So the first piece of the clue is their bodies are kept deep underground on Neomuna. Deep underground on Neptune under Neomuna, and they're put into a kind of hibernative sleep, and their consciousness is uploaded into the Cloud Arc. So that's very similar to how exos are created, which uses stasis, which came from the Veil. So it's like it's all like kind of like paralleling, which is interesting. So then the second entry is Sirish. In the days before uploading the Cloud Arc, one family prepares their home to be in good condition in the event of a Cloud Strider needing to stop in and make themselves lunch. Sirish, the mother of the family, voted for the lockdown to happen, but begins to cry when that's brought up by her daughter. Sirish couldn't finish completing her home, and now because of the lockdown, they have to abandon it. So like, you know, you have this dream of your home and it's not perfect when you buy it and you want to make it perfect through over the years. And here's a person who was like on some type of council that was like, no, we do need to go into the Cloud Arc. We do need to go into lockdown. And now it's like the more personal, like I'm leaving everything behind.
Right.
And it feels permanent. It doesn't feel I'm going into the bunker to wait this out. It feels I'm leaving everything behind.
Yeah, I think that's the overall feeling of that entry is you know,
the finality.
She knows that there could be a definite finality to all of this, and so like leaving the world the way she left it, she almost feels like, well, she didn't get to do everything she wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like that's probably the one thing, that's probably one of the many things that goes through your mind as you're about to die. Also, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't get to do all the things I wanted to do, you know?
I mean, how many times has that literally been said in like a movie where the person dies?
Yeah.
Like those exact words.
Yeah.
And so that moving on to the so then I'll just read this like last couple lines from that Sirish entry because I was just looking at it. And so that life in the computer, it doesn't feel like our home, she admitted, looking surprised. Of course it doesn't feel like home yet, Sirish, Hero, her husband, rumbled softly. You have to put something of yourself into it. So it's like, you know, everyone's having these like very intense emotions about going into the Cloud Arc and how it doesn't feel real yet. Like they're going to do this and I'm sure it gets better, but it's scary. And it's reading this, I was like, why is it scary? Because it's just like, it feels like going into this book, it felt like the Cloud Arc wasn't like some abstract thing. It was more like evacuating your town when a tornado is coming or a big flood is going to happen, you know? And you're saying goodbye to it thinking like the tornado is going to destroy my home. And it's like, well, maybe it won't, you know, like maybe you'll come back and everything will be okay. And it was just better that you got away.
And it's like the storm shelter.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's like, I was kind of surprised going into this to not see like any optimism.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Where it was just like, this is it, this is it, this is it. We're going away forever, and it's never gonna be the same. And it's like, it's nothing but reassurance. It's never like, we'll be back. Let's give it a few years, we'll be back. It'll be okay in the cloud arc.
Yeah, you know, it's like different. We'll be okay in the uploaded network controlled by the veil. Like, what?
So then the third entry is Tino. Tino is one of the onboarding assistants helping people go into their stasis. He's already been uploaded into the Cloud Arc and has chosen his avatar to be a mandala, which is a series of geometric shapes.
Yeah.
What a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
At least helping people. It's like, it's okay. Like, sorry, you go on.
No, I was just going to say, but also it's very funny just because like that's the whole aesthetic of like, you know, the witness and the pyramid fleet and all that, you know, geometry.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's another layer of it that I wasn't even thinking though. Cause like he's an onboarding assistant. He's supposed to be taking people who have not uploaded yet and make them feel okay. And it's just like, here comes this like shifting, like squares and circles and triangles in your face, just like hovering. Uh-huh. It's kind of like mind breaking. And it's like, it's okay. Yeah. You'll love it in the cloud arc. And imagine this being a human who's already kind of like hesitant and seeing that. It's like, what the fuck? You're not human anymore. Like you're nothing. Yeah. Like he could have,
it's
he could have
been line human too.
Yeah.
It's a funny line too. It gives me a headache.
Like, yeah. I'm not going to talk to you if you're going to be a mandala. Yeah.
Like this, imagine this walking kaleidoscope comes up to you.
Yes, thank you. A kaleidoscope. That's exactly what it is. How? Like, imagine convincing your grandmother. Like, come on, come be a kaleidoscope with me. Like, she's not gonna want to do that.
Yeah. That's funny. It's always somebody has to be weird or different.
Yeah. And actually, that is a great line because this is how the entry starts. I'm just gonna read what Callie says to Tino when they see him. She goes, "Founders hits Tino. I'm not going to talk to you if you're going to be a mandala. It gives me a headache."
Yeah,
just right out the bat, Founders tits. Great fucking swear word for the Neo Moon Eye. So in the entry, Tino recounts the events of his previous shift in another region of Neomuna where someone didn't disclose their allergy to shellfish, which I knew how to pronounce this last week. I don't know how to pronounce it this week, which the cathospin inhibitors are derived from, causing a severe reaction. Finally, Tino gets scolded by their supervisor to not be math while working with the patients. So basically, the cathospin inhibitors, they call it deep sleep, which I much prefer the name of. They're pumped full of deep sleep, and it's derived from shellfish. And so someone decided not to disclose their allergy to shellfish, and they got pumped full of deep sleep, and they had a severe allergic reaction.
Which is hilarious, too, because there it is again. It's like the whole, you know, shellfish line and chitin, and then, you know, like freaking, you know.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, and then even with the, what are they called? The, damn it, dude, I'm so bad with names. Radiolaria.
Yeah.
Radiolarian are very tiny chitinous cellular structures that are living organisms with no like mind. Anyway, so there's like that whole shellfish allergy. This is how we're making people in the deep sleep. It's kind of like, why are they throwing that out there? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I wonder if someone who is allergic to shellfish would be allergic to the hive. Like, can a shellfish allergic guardian wear hive chitin?
Whoa, that's a good question. Well, their light would probably protect them, but they would feel
I don't
something,
think
I'm sure.
so. You think
Also,
the light would protect against allergies?
but also, like, why are there shellfish allergies in the future?
I want to know how there are shellfish on Neomuna.
Like, what
Because
is that?
that's what I find really interesting.
Is
Like, are
it
you telling me?
synthetic shellfish that they're
Yeah,
making, or they got an aquarium somewhere and they're harvesting shellfish?
but in that case, how is someone allergic to synthetic shellfish?
Like, yeah.
Right?
Or
Like
maybe it's like
the further
actual
you go
grown
into
and
it, the weirder it
harvested.
gets.
Yeah.
I think.
And we know farming shellfish is bad.
I think it's that the real truth here that we're gonna learn is that oh crap, I typed that wrong. I'm trying to talk and get this image that on Neomuna there was actually still crab species and I don't know. I don't know how to say this. I'm just gonna put it on the screen.
Okay. That's
There's
messed
there
up.
were there were crab people on Neomuna, and that's where the shellfish comes from.
That's such
As
a
you can
funny
see
picture. I
by
remember
this
that.
image I posted, if you're watching the video, a human skeleton next to the evolution of human into a crab person. Fucking
Crap.
image. I accidentally typed human evolves into crap when I was trying to find that image really quick. So then carrying on though, the next entry is called Caius. Caius? Case? Caius?
Sure.
Caius, another onboarding assistant, is explaining the details of uploading to the Cloud Ark to Mr. Mendoza, an elderly man with scoliosis. As word has gone around about the Cloud Ark's living in the term cryo had caught on, and it wasn't exactly true. The pods didn't freeze people, just chilled and slowed their metabolism. Mr. Mendoza mentions arcing back in his day, though that term has fallen out of fashion. The Cloud Ark has a perfect replica of Neomuna, just with better weather and as a landing zone to acclimate everyone to their new setting. Once acclimated, however, they have the choice to stay in their replica city or dive deeper and explore the Cloud Ark. And Mr. Mendoza asks for a body without scoliosis.
So like the obvious thing that they throw out there is like you can live vicariously through another body without the ailments that you have.
Yeah, which is
So
nice.
it yeah, exactly. They're kind of making you feel like, well, this is a nice thing about the Cloud
Yeah.
Ark.
The thing that was weird to me is and so he says, Mr. Mendoza says, "Oh, I used to do some arcing back in my day. Been a while though. Mostly just use the AV stuff to visit the great grandkids." And so it's
Right.
like what's
The
arcing?
grandkids.
Yeah, great grandkids at that. But my question is, what's arcing? Like, what is that compared to the Cloud Ark? Why does this sound different? Why are people so afraid about uploading into the Cloud Ark, but he used to arc?
So what I was thinking is that maybe it was like before they were uploaded fully, there was another way to just enter the ark by just, sitting in a chair and just like
Basically,
hanging
it's the
out.
internet. Like you can just
Yeah,
go on the
exactly.
internet. Yeah. Okay, fair.
Yeah,
That's
so
a
like
good
you can
idea.
either be in the internet or you can just go on the internet and hang out with
Yeah.
your kids who are in the internet playing around.
Yeah. And then
It's like grandpa in California can play Destiny Online with his kids in Florida.
yeah. My other question though is What's the arcade Lost Sector called? I forgot the name of it, but you know what I'm talking about. We don't even know the name of
Yeah,
it.
yeah, 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 yeah. The something dome, Thrilla Dome,
Yeah, the Thrillodome. There's a
Thrillodrome.
Thrillodrome. There's a person when you go into that Lost Sector, they're like, "Oh, the Thrillodrome! I miss that place so much." Well, if it's a perfect replica of Neomuna, how is it not in there?
That's a good question.
Right? It's just one of those like weird like disconnects.
Yeah.
Moving on, we have Adenu. Adenu is a member of the city council and is having anxiety about the upcoming elections as well as the CloudArk uploads. He wonders if he made a mistake spearheading this. They're giving up everything, but what if the pyramids never come back? What if he made the wrong choice? And this is when it really sunk in for me. Because
Yeah.
I have a note here that I ask, is the CloudArk process irreversible? Is the only way to come out of this as a Cloud Strider, which you then only have 10 years left to live.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it's cheap. Like, resources, right? Like, it has to be, like, pretty intensive to create a new humanoid body Cloud Strider with the nanomachines and all that.
Well, yeah, they have SIVA, which, Quicksilver, all that. And they built
Yeah.
the whole place off of the, that's the other thing too, is they really dove in with the mechanics of how the city works, where they harness the wind energy and make energy out of all of that and in the environment around it. It's even cooler that they show little snippets of the environment on Neptune, which is like the diamond beaches, the black sandy beaches with diamonds in them, kind of telling you a little bit of like sci-fi elements, because we know Neptune could possibly be raining diamonds right now, but the pressure is so high and it's very windy and all that. So,
Imagine,
and then like the
imagine.
city looks like a bunch of ships with sails and all that.
Yeah. Imagine being the rich asshole who was on that Exodus ship, and they land on Neptune, and they're just like, my whole identity is all the diamonds that I have, and it's like, yeah, that's what the beach is made of. This completely ruins their perceived entitlement.
That's funny. That's a good one though. That would be funny. Like I can imagine the one like really rich guy steps out and he's like, "Well, my life was a lie."
Yeah. I put all my value into diamonds and it's sand here. The next entry is Magnolia. So in Magnolia, Maggie is a crisis responder who has already uploaded. She was responding to an emergency where Ava, someone who hasn't uploaded yet, was having second thoughts on the logic behind uploading in general. If the world's going to end, why can't I just choose to go a little sooner? Being her reasoning. Maggie comforts her and talks about the possibilities within the CloudArk. Specifically, that the Thrillodrome arcade's sponsoring a watch party for some fucking TV show that they have on
Yeah.
Neomuna,
Yeah.
which is cool, but like, I don't know.
They have a lot of cool TV shows and radio shows on Neomuna. Like it was definitely a city and they had entertainment.
So let me ask you here. So everyone's getting uploaded because they're afraid that the pyramids are coming back, right?
Yeah.
Uploading is a permanent process. It's effectively killing your body and putting yourself in the computer.
Potentially, right.
I mean, at this
So
point,
that's
that's what
the
it
thing
feels
is like
like.
that. Well, I mean, but that's the thing is like they keep lulling these citizens into the belief that it's, only temporary.
I
Like
haven't seen
everything will
them say
be
it was
okay.
temporary once.
Well, no, exactly. They're not going to outright say it, but they're going to make you feel like it's going to be okay.
It doesn't feel like that to me. My impression of this is that they're saying, yes, it's permanent, but we're not going to say that it's permanent. It's just, yes, it's permanent, but it's not bad. It's actually good despite being permanent. Because Maggie here says, if the world's going to end, why can't I just choose to go a little sooner? Like
Yeah.
it, so Would you willingly go into the cloud arc? Like if you know, say no, right? You can say no to this, right? You're a free citizen on Neomuna.
Yeah, but it's funny because later on you realize they're not as free as you thought.
Well, that's why I'm asking this here.
Yeah, oh, sorry. No, I mean, like at this point in time, yeah, I would be like, fuck that.
Yeah.
I don't care how
So,
great it is. I'm not getting
yeah.
uploaded to the Matrix.
It does not sound good. So then the next entry is Rick, spelled R-I-H-K, the much more common way of spelling Rick. Rick is a
Right.
constable of Neomuna who has already uploaded. He's responding to a theft by piloting a frame suit. The culprit is a part of the holdout cult. They don't want to upload to the Cloud Ark and plan on stealing the supplies they'd need to survive on the surface. Commander Jingye, not yet uploaded, arrives to the scene and explains that the time is short and options are limited. If someone doesn't want to upload, they just get cryo and just sleep through everything that's happening.
Yeah, that's
So
freaked out.
your options are you upload, it's a permanent process,
You just go to sleep
or you
forever.
just go to sleep and there will be no one to wake you back up. Or I mean, actually that's not true. I guess there'd be people to wake you back up. But when other people are like in the cloud arc and they're like, this fucking asshole didn't go in the cloud arc, and now all I have to do is hit a button and he comes out of this, like I don't feel like they would. I feel like they'd be pretty petty about it. So you weren't even allowed to refuse uploading. Not even, and it's weird because they're like saying like you're not allowed to take this stuff that's just gonna sit there. It's like insane fucking levels of capitalism. Like we're all going into the computer where we don't need to eat anymore. You are not allowed to take our perishable food for your supplies. You're either going in the computer with us or you're going to sleep.
Yeah. Either do it or night night time.
Yeah, like they have no freedom and it's like so dystopian and kind of
Yeah.
crazy. The next entry is called Gwyneth. Gwyneth is a union dock worker enjoying one last night of drinking with her coworkers. They're talking about what they're going to do when they upload and their excitement to not have to deal with messy fluids. One mentions having a spider avatar, twice as many limbs, and when anyone annoys them, they can just eat them. When the last member of this group, Muniba, arrives, she looks in horror to her drunk friends, informing them that the Cloud Ark still runs off your body's nutrients. So not only will they have hangovers, but thanks to a slowed metabolism, it'll be five times as long.
No thanks.
Yeah, this is just like a really funny little entry to some nice camaraderie that just comes after learning some terrifying dystopian news.
Yeah. That's how all of this stuff is from Neomuna is like here's the
Look at this shiny
warm and
city.
fuzzy. Yeah, the warm and fuzzy, and then here's the horror.
Yeah. They did a good job with it because they got me.
Yeah.
Bungie got me. Next up is Hazima. Hazima is a chef who has already uploaded, and cooking isn't exactly easy and maybe not even necessary in the Cloud Ark, but it's the one thing she really wants to do. Prefab foods are
Yeah.
an option, but they're all the same, exact to the last bit. She wants authentic food with happy accidents, the pursuit of perfection. That's when it hits her. Using a psi-quarter app, normally used for therapy, she uploads the emotions of her cooking into pre-generated foods. So like kind of like her memories of the food, and it's like I made it a
Yeah.
little different that time and it tastes a little different. So it's
Yeah.
and this is like a very innovative way, kind of selling you on the Cloud Ark again. Happening after the dystopian was just revealed.
Yeah. It's just a little bit more meat and potatoes for how it, how like you can't make something perfect because people reject it.
Yeah.
It really is the Matrix. It's like even in the Matrix, they had to make it not perfect so that the people wouldn't reject it.
And continuing the trend of it's not
Horror.
all that bad, it's actually pretty okay. You know, they have an early adopter, and by the sounds of it, this guy Photon, spelled Photo0n, he didn't even wait for he didn't even wait for the pyramids to be coming back. He was like, Cloud Arc, I'm in. Like or she.
It's like the guy, it's like the, you know what it's like? It's like the little hacker game bro that's just waiting for the first opportunity for the Cloud Arc to allow citizens to upload. And he's like, dude, this is my chance. And even his name's spelled in like leet speak almost.
Oh, and also, I'm sorry. She, not he.
Oh, I'm sorry. She.
Yeah, she's stretched and so she's walking around, and I feel like there's a reason. Maybe I'm wrong, but because I'm gonna read this last little bit of the entry, where so Photon is you know walking around in their avatar in the Cloud Arc, and she's like very excited about it, like no bio breaks, no excusing herself from dinner invites, like the Cloud Arc is exactly where she wants to be, and yeah, so she opened her command prompt, selected an avatar and gender for the day, and turned sideways back to the streets and plazas of the shallow Cloud Arc. More shallow than ever, he realized. So just like, you know, very, like definition of gender fluid in this character, where they just like, yeah, you know what, today I'm a guy. And so they're walking down the street, and he sees someone who is not having a good time with their avatar, and they fucked it up. So I'm gonna read this last little bit.
Dude.
Oh dear, no, that's not right. The sound of a barely restrained panic came from a short avatar nearby, mostly human, save for the hideously skewed left brow and cheekbone. Hey, no bothers. Want an assist? Photon approached the confused visitor. The distortion looked painful. I don't know what I did, and I can't fix it. All right, deep settles. We'll patch you up. He didn't look like he understood, but his simulated breathing, founders who still breathed, slowed. Photon opened up the man's avatar settings and studied. No, Ken, how you managed, but you unlocked your advanced avatar settings. Can you fix it? Not even a grind, Gildy. He reached the newcomer's last autosave, and the avatar reverted to a standard human appearance. Crunch some time before you use this menu, but if it happens again, just push here. Thanks, Gildy. All green, Photon said. Good to remember we all start somewhere. So like, Photon here is so fucking deep in this. He's got his own like Cloud Arc slang.
Oh
And
yeah, Photon is the game bro pro that's like, watching the new blueberries arrive, but they were there at the beginning, like, yes, I'm ready. I've been ready. I've been playing this forever. Come on, let's go. And then showing the new blueberries how to adjust their settings and what to do.
And that's honestly the not only was this book like really well written with like a lot of like emotional depth for its characters, and it has this like revealing of the deep seedy secrets of Neomuna, but also the way it was constructed is beautiful in its own right. So this is a fantastic book. I fully suggest actually reading all the entries yourself, because it starts out with Mr. Shea, Sarish, and Tino, where it's like slowly like saying like, hey, it's okay, we're going into the Cloud Arc, it's for our own safety, it's important, you know. And then it starts to get a little like nearing the end of that, like, well wait, why does it sound so permanent? And then it's like, oh, because maybe it is permanent. And in Caius and Adenu, and then you have Magnolia, who's like, it is permanent, why would I do that? And it's like, it's starting to get scary. And then you go to Rick, who's part of the cult, who's like, I don't want to do this. And it's like, I want to stay out. And they're like, you don't have a choice. But then they kind of flow it back the other way, where it's like, but it's still kind of fun. You're hanging out with your friends, you're drinking, but now you're going to have a five times longer hangover. And then you have innovative people who are still trying to make like cuisine taste authentic and proper. And then you have your fucking like what is it, blue pill, red pill? I don't know what the fucking the one is.
Yeah.
you have your pill bros here who are like so deep fucking in it, and it kind of like spins it back around where it, like, it gets darker, 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 brighter, brighter, brighter. And
yeah,
I don't know how I'd feel about it. I don't know what I would want
to
do.
That's the point. It's to make you feel like uneasy about the whole entire thing. It's just showing the dynamic and how there's so many different views, and you have to, it's really difficult to consider them all, especially when you're trying to save humanity or whatever the council's ultimate goal was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's another thing. Like, I mean, the guy, the councilman, I think it was Adenu, he was like, this was for our safety, but what if it was the wrong move for our safety? What if our safety could have been something else?
Yeah.
So, like, maybe Adenu got played.
Yeah.
Fantastic book. I don't know who wrote it, but it's a fantastic book. That's all I got to say. And that is going to be it for us. Really, really squeezed that out at the last little bit there. So hopefully next week we will be talking about one of this season's lore books and finishing up the season. So maybe we won't even talk about the lore book. We'll just finish up the season. And then hopefully on the 29th, we'll have Tales of the Forgotten Volume 3 to talk about. That would be really fun.
That'd be awesome.
Right before Halloween. Nice and spooky time.
Yeah. Spooky time.
All right. So join us again in 2 weeks on October 15th. Oh shit. That means Friday's Friday the 13th in October. That's a special one. Holy shit. So join us on the 15th following Friday the 13th in October. And we'll be talking about something. It'll be a lot of fun. We hope you come hang out. Bye, everybody.
Bye.